Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Clones, welcome back to the Daily Jungle. Thursday is in the books. You clones did it. Romageddon is here. I cannot believe this is going down tomorrow. But before that, we had what might be my last show, and it was a damn good one. Pat Forty came in to talk about Rick Pitino's demise at Louisville. CJ McCollum of the Portland Trailblazers was tremendous. Also, Navy head coach Ken Niumatalolo is one of my favorites, and he came through once again. Three good guests, but not like any of you ghouls cared about. Not a day before bum smack, personal appearance smack, and Toby from Houston's call plus the fam. That's all tomorrow. We still have some things to take care of before that. Alvy, let's get it. I'm not going to lead with Romageddon, but I will get there sooner than later. What I do want to lead with today are the Chicago Cubs. We'll talk some baseball. The Cubs beat the Cards 5-1 in St. Louis last night, and in so doing, they clinch the NL Central, and they get a return to the postseason. Not nearly as easy as it sounds. In fact, the Cubs are the first team since the 09 Phillies to win their division the year after winning the World Series. And they proved how hard it was by sleepwalking through the first half of the year. At the All-Star break, they were below 500. They were 5.5 games back of Milwaukee. Since then, they're 22 games over 500, and they are the division champs. So I've got to tip my hat. That's a macho effort. And it was a team effort. But as much as last night's clubhouse celebration was about the team, it really was about one guy, and one guy only. John Lackey, the big fella, got the start yesterday. He went six strong innings. He allowed just one earned run. In the clubhouse, after that game, teammate John Lester paid tribute to him after what might have been his final regular season start of his entire career.
Game from this guy, and I'm sure you guys have too. He's one of the best teammates, one of the best people I've ever got to play with. Tonight was probably his last regular season start. Here's to one hell of a career.
Yeah. How did Randall get in there? I gotta hear that again. Alvy, how did Randall get into the Cubs clubhouse?
And I'm sure you guys have too. He's one of the best teammates, one of the best people I've ever got to play with. Tonight was probably his last regular season start. Here's to one hell of a career.
Yeah! It's one thing for Randall to show up in my horse races or anywhere around here, but somehow he got in that clubhouse too. Good job, Randall. I love Lester saying one hell of a bleeping career. But then there's no way you have a moment like that and a tribute like that for a guy like John Lackey without John himself saying a few words. So, John, is there anything that you would like to share with the group? Again, did you hear what he just said? I didn't come here for no bleeping haircut, boys. And no, I didn't come here for no bleeping haircut, boys. It's not what Adam Morrison shouts when he's staring in the window of a Sports Clips trying to get a glimpse at the TVs. No, what that is an epic battle cry. That's right up there with Chase Utley's World Bleeping Champions.
World Champion. World Champion.
I'd put that in the same neighborhood. Is L.A. King, thanks, Randall, as L.A. King Jonathan Quick going with the hat trick of F-bombs back in 2012.
Thank you. Thank you so much. How about this f***ing team right here? Look at this f***ing team. Look at these f***ing guys.
But of course, with all due respect to John Lackey, even he is never going to run down fellow Chicago legend Corey Crawford, who baptized the Blackhawks championship rally with two F-bombs and a nuts blast.
All right, Chicago! Yeah! Biggest bunch of beauties in the league. They worked their nuts off for this trophy.
I'll say this. Maybe Crawford's outburst back in the day would explain why the CSN crew that's broadcasting the postgame party doesn't even blink when Lester and Lackey are working blue. These cats are dropping F-bombs left, right, and center, and the hosts back in the studio don't even acknowledge it. Respect. They didn't come here for no bleeping haircuts either. But let's be clear. This was not just some gravy training by Lackey. Lackey earned that beer bath last night. He retired the last 10 batters he faced. So, of course, what was going through his mind as he approached the finish line?
I don't know, man. Every one of them is special. Like I've been telling these kids, like, don't take any one of these for granted. You never know what your last one. If you start thinking this is something easy, it's time for you to go home.
What was going through your mind on the mound? Just knowing that one more out, closer to the beer.
I'm always one more out closer to the beer. I mean, they just mean a little bit more tonight.
Yeah! Amen, brother. We are all always one more out closer to a beer. And yes, I'm guessing that beer did taste pretty sweet last night. And now they have time to celebrate, relax, and get ready for the postseason. Just do not ask the big fella anything at all about who they're going to face.
And can you talk too as well, just a little bit about this Cubs team, third straight year in the playoffs. You guys were able to come back after winning the series last year, put away all that hangover kind of stuff, and just do what you guys ended up doing for this season.
It was tough. I mean, it's always a challenge. We got a lot of people's best shots. And we played well, and you know, we're back in the playoffs, and we'll see what happens.
Do you like how you line up against the Nationals? I mean, I know it's still a week away, but how
I think we're going to have a good time tonight. I don't really care about the Nationals.
Yeah, look, I respect the hustle of the reporter, trying to do his job, trying to ask about the Nationals. But does a beer-soaked John Lackey really seem like the best guy to be breaking down the matchups in that series? Did you think he was just going to run through their lineup and tell you the strengths and the weaknesses? Yeah, thanks. Thanks. I'm really glad that you asked me that question. Here's what I can tell you. They've got a great rotation, but I feel like we do as well. Of course, we're going to have to neutralize their speed on the bases whenever possible. I'd like to see what our bats can do against their bullpen, but ultimately, this is going to come down to who has the deeper bench. I mean, did you really think that guy was going to get into all that? It's John Lackey, drenched in beer, after clinching a division title. He's not going to bust out the sabermetrics. He didn't come there to analyze matchups, and he sure as hell did not come there to get a bleeping haircut.
He didn't come here for no f***ing haircut, boy!
Yeah! With Pat 40. Pat, so good to have you back. How are you?
Hey, Jim. I'm doing well. I'm looking outside here in Louisville, and there's no smoke from the buildings yet.
Yet, I think is the key word. All right, Pat, let's talk about it. You've covered Rick Pitino for nearly 30 years. You've spent a lot of time with him. You even co-wrote a book with him. So let me start here, Pat. What have the last 48 hours been like for you since the report first came out about University 6 and then Louisville's presser yesterday?
Well, I mean, you really can't believe that that they're in this situation, just, you know, coming off the heels of that last debacle with the strippers in the dorm. And, you know, as you said, I have covered Rick Pitino for a long time. I've had a good relationship, enjoyed covering him. His teams have been a lot of fun to cover. But you just kind of, you can't overlook the cumulative weight of everything that's transpired and been pinned to him here. And it's a sad day, really. You know, I mean, see a guy that's this brilliant at what he does end up with his career so tarnished.
Pat Forty joining us. Hey, Pat, when you go back and you think about Pitino and his time at Kentucky back in the early 1990s when that program was coming off probation, what kind of thoughts do you have?
Yeah, I mean, it was pure fun. It was a smaller scale. You obviously could tell how great a coach he was, but the stakes hadn't built to the point, obviously, that they would get to then. And I remember his second year at Kentucky was my first year covering the team, and they had the best record in the SEC, but they were on probation for a scandal at Kentucky before he got there. They couldn't play in the postseason. They couldn't be crowned champions, so they had this parade around downtown Lexington, him on a fire truck, and it seemed like, you know, like he just won the high school Sweet 16 or something. It was very a very different time, I think, a more innocent time at that point. And from that point on, you know, Kentucky went back to being a monster, and Pitino went on to become a giant of a coach, and he went back to the pros, and the salaries kept escalating, and I think it just kind of became almost too big as it went along.
Pat Forte is a national college columnist for Yahoo Sports. And then, Pat, as you point out, he goes to the NBA, but then he comes back to the college game, and he goes to Louisville. AD Tom Jurich let Pitino run things the way he saw fit. In hindsight, was that a bad idea from the outset, or initially were things fine?
I think initially things were fine. I think perhaps, if you look, the hunger might have gotten too great to win that second championship, to become the first guy to win two at two different schools. And certainly the head-to-head competition with John Calipari, a former friend who they came to despise each other. When Calipari started getting the better of Pitino, I would not discount that as being a prime motivating factor for Rick upping the ante, so to speak, in the way that he procured players. And I think that that really might have played a factor in where this thing got completely out of control.
All right, so it gets totally out of control. Did Pitino take his eye off the ball accidentally, or did he do it intentionally? In other words, did he not want to see some of the things that were happening?
Probably. I mean, I think that would seem to be a fair assessment of it, that, coaches always want that shred of plausible deniability. And, the phrase that you hear is, get things done or get me players. And it's not an explicit get them this way, pay this much for that guy. It's, make it happen. And I think that's where you end up having you used to have a lot of assistants who had to take the bullets when these things became public. Now the NCAA has changed the rules, so there's more head coach responsibility. And that's why this is one of these things that it doesn't matter whether Rick knew or didn't know. He would have gone down if Louisville hadn't pushed him out.
Pat Forte joining us once again. Pat, when you look at the FBI allegations and the timing of some of the events that are linked to University 6, and then you consider that Louisville was already in trouble because of the stripper scandal, how do you square that? I mean, why were they still pushing the envelope past the point of breaking even when they were already in trouble?
That's the thing, Jim, is it's just so reckless, so brazen, so completely disregarding of the NCAA rules and where Louisville stood vis-a-vis those rules. And that's why, I wrote a couple of days ago, they should get the death penalty, because it's just a complete disregard for the fact that they were already in serious trouble. And let's just go out and buy a couple guys, while we're waiting to find out, or have just found out, that we're getting slammed to the point that they're taking down one of our banners. And if you're going to do that, I mean, it's hard to have any pity on the University of Louisville or the basketball program for having that sort of mindset.
Yeah, it's a good piece, and you should read that. Go back. That was written on Tuesday, a piece for Yahoo. So, Pat, lay that out. If they get the death penalty, how does that go, and then for how long?
Well, the NCAA has within its rule structure, the possibility of shutting down a program for at least 1 year or more. Could be 2 years. I'm certainly doubtful they would ever do anything beyond that. The last time it happened, it's been a penalty they've been very reticent to use. They used it one time in 30 years ago with SMU football, and they have not used it since. But, I remember very clearly a few years ago talking to David Burst of the NCAA and saying, do you think we'll ever see the death penalty again? He said, yes, we will. And if that's the case, then this would be the time to do it. Now, it would come at, I'm sure, great, great opposition from the Atlantic Coast Conference, from ESPN, from people that have a monetary stake in Louisville as a partner, both as a broadcast partner, as a conference partner. It would not be a decision easily arrived at, but I think if the NCAA wants to be serious about deterrence, then this is what it should do.
But Pat, on the one hand, I would say this is absolutely stunning, this fall from grace, and then I would say it's really not that stunning at all when you look at his track record. But Rick Pitino was always just such a complicated figure, in that he was such a brilliant coach and such a charismatic figure. You look at his entire career, Pat. I mean, what do you make of the fact that that career, a Hall of Fame career with all its warts and everything else, literally is going to end or ended in a 5-minute meeting yesterday?
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's like a Shakespearean tragedy. It's not, a life or death tragedy, but it's a professional tragedy for one of the most well-known and accomplished people in that sport, and really all of college sports. And, to see it end this way, and as you said, they didn't have to do this. They didn't have to pay $100,000 to Brian Bowen. They already had a good team. There's no reason for Rick Pitino at age 65 or 64 to be engaging in this sort of thing. His legacy would have been secure. his place, you know, in the pantheon of the game would have been secure. And now it's tarnished. The whole thing is very much tarnished.
Now, that might be the biggest name, and there could be other dominoes to fall. Papo, before I let you go, what do you make of Alabama announcing that they had accepted the resignation of basketball administrator Kobe Baker, especially when you consider his previous job was assistant director of enforcement at the NCAA?
How about that? I mean, it is that's a college sports storyline that, like, even the most cynical of us probably couldn't have made up. That the guy goes from enforcing the rules to breaking the rules within a year. It's amazing. It's troubling, but at the same time, it's almost comically indicative or emblematic of where college sports is in terms of its, I think, real lack of credibility.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, college sports, because I was going to say, Pat, is it a college basketball problem, or is this happening in college football in a slightly different way?
Sure, it's happening in college football in a different way, in a lesser way, because there's less shoe company involvement with grassroots. You know, there really isn't a grassroots football equivalent to the AAU in basketball, and because one player in basketball can make such a big difference compared to one player in football. So is it going on? Absolutely, though. I mean, are there agents involved paying players when they're in high school, when they're in college? Sure. Are there people making deals from the inside of universities and their programs to get those players with agents and financial advisors? Absolutely. Yes, this is a college sports problem, not just a college basketball problem.
So a final thought, if the NCAA and college basketball want to clean this thing up, how would you go about doing that? Where would you even start?
Adam, right? Baum? I don't know. It would have to be, it's going to have to be radical. It's going to have to be things like assessing a death penalty. If you want a basketball-specific solution, it would, I think, maybe be get rid of the one-and-done rule. Let players go pro right away out of high school again so that these guys aren't coming in and looking for that one-year payday because they have to go to college. In the bigger picture, longer term, it might be time to throw away amateurism and just blow up the entire collegiate model and figure out a better way to do it. There's been plenty of people clamoring for that. You know, whether it's name, image, and likeness is at least a starting point. But I think there's going to have to be fundamental changes coming out of this, because I'm telling you, Jim, this is going to be a huge story that doesn't stop for weeks, months, maybe even years.
5, 10, 15 years from now, clones, coast to coast, in fact, worldwide, will be asking each other, where were you when the Jim Rohn podcast went number one? Because where were you when the most relentless, rabid, loyal, straight up best listeners in the history of sports talk radio hijacked the iTunes charts? If you did not know, you do now. The Jim Rohn podcast, thanks to all of your subscriptions and listens and reviews, went to number one on iTunes in just over 24 hours. The pod climbed from number 78 in sports and recreation to number freaking one. And moreover, it actually charted in the top 10 for overall podcasts. Clones, you did it. You hit the sports chart so hard, it actually dented the top 10 on the overall podcast list for all podcasts, not just sports. It's amazing. And it is a reminder that the clones are as strong today as they've ever been. Let's get down to some business. What does it all mean? Where do we go from here? First thing first, your rewards, your payoff, they are as follows. One segment of Bum Smack. One segment of personal appearance as show fodder. One segment of the Rat Family. And now that you did ding that number one spot, I will do it. I will play the Toby in Houston call. Understand that I never, ever thought that I would do any of this stuff again, especially that phone call. I never thought that I would do any of it again, let alone all of it on the same day. In fact, if I'm being really honest, I never thought that I'd have to make good on this insane promotion, because I did not think that you had it in you. I did not think that you could climb the charts the way you did. But that was my mistake. And a promise is a promise. And I am a man of my word. So as much as I really do not want to do any of this, and I mean that, this is not shtick, I don't want to do any of this, there's a reason I ripped it off from you in the first place. As much as I don't want to do this, You will indeed get everything I said that I would give you. And you're going to get it on Friday. And this Friday shall forever be known in the jungle as Romageddon. Let's talk about Romageddon for a minute. Romageddon is your Super Bowl. It's your biggest moment ever. Now, here's the thing about the Super Bowl. Sometimes it's great and sometimes it's horrible. Sometimes it lives up to the incredible hype and sometimes it's the biggest disappointment ever. Making it great. Making it is great. Winning it is better. In fact, the thing about the Super Bowl, the team that makes it and loses is not the second best team in the NFL. It often feels like they're the worst team in the NFL. Keep that in mind. Because now you have a game to play. Don't just be happy to be there. I cannot stress that enough. Don't just be happy to be there. You have a game to play. You have preparation that you need to do. Now you have a stage bigger than you will ever have again. I understand there was a celebration last night. I understand bottles got popped. I understand the party went all night long. But now you have to pivot quickly. Now you have a job to do. Again, nobody remembers the losers. Get ready. It's a quick turnaround. If you haven't pivoted already, it's almost too late. Get to work. Do your job. Here's how this sets up. This has been a common question that I'm getting on Twitter. No, I am not jamming all of this into a single block. I promised you one block per thing. Each reward gets its own segment. You're looking at four total segments. A segment for bum smack, a segment for personal appearance smack, a segment for the family, and a segment for the Toby and Houston call. Now, how do you want to participate? What do you want to hit on? What race do you want to run in? Do you want to call? Do you want to email? Do you want to tweet? You can play it however you want. Understand this, though. Any day of the year, you can send a tweet or an email, and maybe you slip something by. Or I read a war I wish I hadn't. But you have never, ever, ever been able to call up and do these things on the phone. Not without getting the LT hammer. Not without getting run. So I'm going to say this. The leash is going to be a little longer. Hell, I may get into this. There might not be any leash at all. You might be a dog running free. We'll see. What I'm telling you is, you've done half your job. You're not there yet. I think you've done your job, and then the show does itself. It's not. Hey, listen, if you don't show up for it the right way, I'm just going to do my normal show. I'll be prepared. I'm never going to come in here and say, I think I'll let the clones carry this for me. You've done half your job. Now finish the job. You did half your job in getting the Jim Rohn podcast to number one on iTunes. Now you finish. You need to not only call, you need to be locked in when you call. Because I am never going to open up the phone lines for this kind of stuff ever again. This is your chance. Your one chance. A one-off. Do not waste it. You'll never get this shot ever again. And one more thing before I go to break, which is key. This is not the smack-off, which is good. What I mean by that is you don't need to play your way in. This is not invite-only the way the smack-off is. Everybody's welcome. You simply need to pick up the phone and call or tweet or email. Everybody is invited to this rager. CJ McCollum is my guest. All right, CJ, give me 1 minute. I want to lay out what you did in the offseason. And you had an incredible offseason in the sense that you spent some time at Harvard Business School. You interviewed Commissioner Silver. You worked with Habitat for Humanity and UNICEF in Ethiopia. You hosted Basketball Without Borders Camp. You spent time with your brother Eric as he plays in Europe. And you participated in the two-day Bloomberg Technology Summit. And on top of that, you've been working on your game too. So having said all of that, CJ, how was your summer?
My summer was amazing, honestly. It was one of the best summers I've ever experienced, just from an on and off the court standpoint. Being able to go to Africa and learn more about the culture, being able to help the communities, you know, across the world, and being able to spend time with family, and being able to gain more information at an institution like Harvard and network in Bloomberg Technology. It was just a really, really great experience. I'm thankful I was able to, you know, go through all of that while still working out and being able to get some work done for my day job.
All right, so in terms of that day job, you're now entering your fifth season. How different are you as a player purely from a preparation standpoint now than you were when you first came into the league?
I think I just have a better understanding of the league overall, how to prepare for games, how to prepare my body and my mind mentally for the rigors of the season. Obviously, we're going through training camp right now, so two-a-days is here. It's important you figure out, you know, how to maintenance your body properly, how to get the right rest, how to get the right amount of sleep while still balancing a healthy relationship standpoint from, you know, friends and family to significant others. It's hard to find that balance, but each year you get a little bit more comfortable with how to do everything. And then from a on-the-court standpoint, understanding systems a little bit better, having that familiarity with teams you're going to be facing and playing the Warriors every year since I've been in the NBA in the playoffs, essentially. It gives you that experience and a better understanding of how to play championship-caliber basketball.
CJ McCollum joining us. Now, you're only 26 years old, but based on the way I'm hearing you talk right now, it feels like you've already advanced way past the point of being interested in stats and numbers to where the only thing that matters right now is winning. Now, that's not to say that you weren't interested in winning before, but does it feel that way to you right now, that that is the only thing that matters?
Yeah, definitely. I think as you come into the league as a youngster, you're trying to prove yourself, and you don't really understand the game, you know, from a maturity standpoint. You know how you got to this point, and you try to do that to the best of your ability. So if you're a scorer, you try to score. If you're a rebounder, you try to rebound because you want to prove that you're worth, you know, the value of wherever you were picked. But as you continue to establish yourself and have success, obviously winning is the priority during this entire process, but there's a lot of individual goals you have. And after a few years, once you start to secure and solidify yourself in the league and you find that generational wealth and you have all those things in your favor, it really, really comes down to just winning because statistics don't matter. I put up good numbers, teams put up good numbers, and the results haven't always been there from a, you know, all-star standpoint, from a all-NBA standpoint, and you realize that winning brings all those things you want and like as a competitor. Winning gives you those things, so it's important that we understand that. And I think although we have the second youngest team in the NBA, we have a lot of guys in there, you know, 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th year in the league, and they're starting to understand that, you know, when we win, everybody gets paid, everybody has a great time, and everybody's able to enjoy, you know, the basketball game.
Trailblazers guard CJ McCollum joining us. Now, you reached out to Paul George and Carmelo Anthony. You tried to recruit them to Portland. What was your pitch to them?
The biggest thing was just to understand how they can help our team. I think that playing in a lot of different cities, you have misconceptions or you don't necessarily understand the city because you stay in a hotel. Sometimes it's a back-to-back, and you don't really have time to explore, depending on if you're, you know, on the Eastern Conference or the Western Conference. But just kind of explaining them what the city is like and how they can help us. And I think from that standpoint, as a player and as a peer, it's my job to, if somebody has questions, to explain those things. And if somebody can help our team as a player, you have to explore those opportunities. But I think we have a good team here. We have a lot of great pieces, and we did a good job in this draft. And it's about building from within and doing whatever is necessary to get better.
Portland's opening up their preseason against Phoenix on Tuesday night. CJ McCollum, my guest. After the Melo trade, you tweeted, quote, Cantor released a statement about his love for OKC and the organization. 4 days later, he got traded. Stay woke. It's a business, end quote. Look, you know it's a business, but when you see something like that, what kind of thoughts do you have?
No, I just want players and fans to realize how serious this business is. And as an organization, you have to do what's necessary to move the organization forward and to get better, because at the end of the day, it's about winning. It's about moving that bottom line. And, you know, that's how big businesses and big corporations continue to expand. And as a player, you have to do what's best for yourself. So I just want fans and players to realize that, A, we all know it's a business, but B, when players make, you know, certain decisions to leave teams or stay with teams, you know, a lot of times they're heavily criticized and judged unfairly. But when an organization decides to do that, they say that, oh, you know, it's for the betterment of the team, it's for the betterment of the organization. So I just don't want there to be that double standard there. I want everybody to be aware of the fact that the organizations have to do what's best for them, and the players also have to do what's best for themselves and their families, because they are entities as well.
You retweeted a tweet of Greg Popovich's thoughts on racial inequality in the U.S. and white privilege, and then you include the comment, Pop, one of the realists. What did you make of what he had to say?
I think he's very, very informed on what's going on in the world. And I think as a person who served in the military, he has a very unique perspective. You know, obviously, And he's coached for a long time. He's been around a lot of different races. He's been around a lot of different faces of people from ethnic backgrounds with different religions. But I think that he's very, very keen on his ideas, and he's outspoken, and he's not afraid to be judged by, you know, his thoughts. And I think that what he's saying, he has a point. He has a point in saying that obviously there's a lot of different things going on in the world, and it's important that people understand that you have to talk about things that are uncomfortable. You know, race, inequality, different things that are going on in the world. It may not be comfortable to everyone, but once you experience being pulled over, once you experience certain things growing up in impoverished neighborhoods, your perspective on life changes. And not everybody grows up in those situations. And not everybody that's black is poor or dumb. And not everybody that's white is racist. And not every police officer is racist. So it's just about finding that common ground, finding that balance, and understanding that you need both sides need to come together. African Americans, Asians, Hispanics, Mexicans, everything needs to come together and talk to police enforcement and talk to different people out there so that we can better understand each other.
Now, CJ, these platforms are also different. You and I can have this conversation right here, and it's very different, for instance, than having some kind of conversation on Twitter. Like, for instance, you'll always speak your mind on Twitter, and when you're cracking jokes, everybody's going to love that. But what kind of tweets and responses did you get or do you get when you weigh in on social issues?
Yeah, I think it's mixed responses. Some people applaud you for speaking up and having a voice and saying your thoughts and opinions on certain matters. And then others, you know, they don't want to see that side of you. They just want to see you as a guy who can run, jump, pass, and shoot and help their fantasy teams win. So you get mixed results. Some people, you know, are more opinionated on why we should never speak out, why we should never do things. And then some people say, you know, it's good that they're having an opinion and a voice because we are human beings and we all grow up in different situations and different circumstances. So our feelings and thoughts on certain matters aren't going to be in line with everyone across the world. And, you know, my favorite player, you know, a lot of people may like Tom Brady or a lot of people may like someone, but that doesn't mean everything they think is going to be in line with what you think. So I think it's important that we just respect each other's opinions.
Ken Niumatalolo, you're coming off a win over Cincinnati Saturday night, 42-32. Let me start right there. The offense, Ken, had 569 rushing yards. When you look at those numbers and you consider the fact that you did it despite some injuries, what does it say about the depth of this year's team?
Just really excited about it, Jim. Just our young guys played well. You know what I mean? We've got some guys that haven't played, but we knew they were talented. And I said that, you know, probably our fastest group of slot backs that we've had since we've been here. Like I said, not much experience, but really happy the way they played. You know, Cincinnati had been playing great defense, and so really, you know, proud of the way they played last week.
Ken, it's the first time that the two schools have played in more than 50 years, and after the game you said, quote, "People that don't see us very often, it's a great advantage for us. You can practice against yourselves all summer, but this is what we do for a living. This is what our program has been doing for decades," end quote. Look, I'm not going to suggest that you knew that you were going to put up nearly 600 yards on the ground, but how much pride do you take in the fact that this is what you have been doing for decades and the fact that you can execute your plan pretty much no matter what?
Well, yeah, I'm not saying it without being sound arrogant, but it's a sound offense, Jim. You know, we've been doing it a long time. You know, I learned it from Coach Paul Johnson at Hawaii. It worked back in the 80s. You know, it's option offense is based off numbers. So it's not very complicated. You go where there's less numbers. And you go when you got angles, you know, you got good blocking angles. So we know the offense works. You know, we've been able to, you know, put up yards and points against teams that we probably have no business moving the ball against. But, you know, we've been doing this a long time. Our staff's been together a long time. Ivan Jasper, you know, LA guys, as good of offensive coordinator, quarterback coach as there is. And, you know, it's something we believe in. You know, we believe in our offense and you know, our kids, more importantly, our kids believe in it.
See, that's the thing, Ken. I understand that it's a sound offense and it's effective and you execute it really well. But at the same time, you do have to go out and bring in players that fit a certain mindset. So when you're evaluating players, what kind of things are you looking for that let you know that they'll be a good fit for the academy and for your program?
That's the easy one, Jim. First and foremost is character. You know, there's a lot of guys that can run. You know, obviously you look at the 40 time, you look at the vertical, and you know, you watch all those kinds of things. You watch their high school highlight tape and their game tapes, and you watch them play. And that stuff's all important. But our guys have been here a long time, and we talk to kids. We talk to coaches. And you just get a sense. You know, there have been many times, you know, I ask a guy, he's a really good player. And my assistant coach, he goes, tells me, Coach, he won't fit in here. He's not one of us. But there are a lot of times we'll get guys, you know, Coach, this guy's one of us. And our staff, like I said, has been together for so long. It's always amazing to me that we'll go out to 50 states and our guys will bring back guys, and they're all very similar. You know what I mean? Tough, hard-nosed kids, good kids from good families, overlooked by certain schools. But the biggest thing here is that just kids are tough. They're resilient. You know, when we play people and I hear the other coach talking about cut blocking, that we have them. Because if that's all you're concerned about is cut blocking, that's just one aspect of our offense. We're north and south. Our offensive linemen come off the ball. We don't go east and west like zone teams. We're not kick sliding like pass protection teams. We're going to come across the line of scrimmage and hit you in the mouth, and that's kind of our nature. It's our philosophy and it's our culture.
Ken Niumatalolo joining us. Let me ask you something. If the system is not that hard to figure out, and it's so effective for you every single year, decade after decade, why do you think the more teams don't try to run it?
I don't know, Jimmy. You know, it's a day and age where everybody wants to be in the gun, you know, slinging the ball all over the place. You know, I've had some people, you know, ask me different things, you know what I mean? Am I anti-passing the ball? I'll get emails. It goes, you know, am I anti-this? And it goes, no, I'm just anti-losing. I want to win. You know, and I know this offense works. And I don't know, you know, just, but it plays well for us because like I said, I mean, you might see this offense once a year and 11 other weeks here are seeing people in the spread, throwing the ball all over the place. And then they got 2 days to prepare for us. It's hard to get ready for us that quick because it's just different. It's not that coaches, don't know how to defend it. I mean, there are a lot of good coaches in the country, but their kids don't see it. You don't see it week in and week out. You know what I mean? It'd be just like playing a different type of basketball. You know, Princeton offense, we used to give people fits just because people didn't see it a lot. So it's similar to us.
That's really tremendous. You know, I'd finally say that the plan usually for you in the summertime is to, if possible, get away from football. And I know this was a busier summer than you normally have, and it's tougher to unplug. But when you finally step away and then you come back, how hyped and how pumped are you still, even 28 years in, to get back to the game, get back to work?
It's like it's year one. You know what I mean? The nerves are still there. We always laugh before the game. It doesn't matter what stadium we're at. You know, before the game, you're changing and putting on your shirt and everything, getting ready for the game, and you're sitting down reading the program. And me and Coach Pearson, our defensive coordinator, who's been here longer than I have, we just kind of laugh and look at each other and go, well, different year, different stadium, same butterflies. You know what I mean? And I think, Jim, when that disappears, then it's time to go. But I'm still excited. You know, I go back to Hawaii to my house and, you know, and water the grass, and I enjoy myself. But as it gets closer to the season, I mean, I start to get anxious because I know during the season I can't sleep. You know, I wish I could go to sleep. But I go to bed, you know. I don't even make it for Final Jeopardy. You know, I start off watching Jeopardy, but I go to sleep so early, but I get up because I'm so excited to come back. And I think when that goes away, the desire to come back, the wins don't last very long. The euphoria of wins don't last very long. The losses, I mean, they haunt you for the rest of your life. And I think when I lose that, I think when the losses don't really hurt, then I think it's time for me to go back to Hawaii and start raking the yard.
In the meantime, go ahead and run with this. Do your thing. Do your prep. The official hashtag is hashtag Romageddon. 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 I've got a feeling that if you can get a podcast from number 78 to number 1, you could also do some viral damage with a hashtag too. Hashtag Romageddon. Go for it, clones. Do what you do. As badly as I want to kill this thing, as badly as I want to stop you, I'm not going to. You earned it. Now make sure you're ready for it. I know Alvy's ready for it. He's already knocked out a promo for Romageddon.
Terrell Suggs. I mean, he has the gums the size of an elephant and teeth the size of a mouse.
Mike Sherman is a fat, pear-shaped loser.
I only want to talk about the abundance of oil on Doc Rivers' nose and forehead.
There's been a moratorium on bum smack.
Appearance smack.
Banned on this show for years.
The family's never coming back for any reason. I will quit before I bring this family back.
I was happier than Gary Gaetti sitting in a big pile of cedar chips.
I want to add Roth and the Dolls to the Rivers family.
Ed Olmos, L.A. County Pineapple Dodgeball Champ.
San Antonio people, please quit drilling on top base.
Bottom line is this. You get one segment of bum smack.
More bums playing chess with dog turds.
You get a segment of the rat family.
I told them to say not do this.
They're a bunch of rats.
You would get one segment of personal appearance smack.
Hey, Jim, this is Charlie Weiss. I was trying to get some of that jungle caramel you got.
You get the one call from the one guy talking about that one thing in his back to your phone calls. Toby in Houston. Hi, Toby. How are you?
You doing, Jim?
Hey. As always, thank you very much for listening, clones. I appreciate you very, very much. And thank you for doing it. You made the Jim Rome podcast the number one sports podcast on iTunes. Now I'm going to hold up my end of the bargain tomorrow. I give to you Romageddon. Check back then. I'm out.